So without further ado, I am excited to get to announce and introduce Dr. Drea Olmsted. She last year was scheduled to come to Sprouts and got snowed out. But then it was such a bonus, she and her husband came on a Friday evening and shared, and we were able to open it up to our church community and invited couples to come. And so it was such a great thing that God worked out for couples to get to come and hear from she and her husband together on a Friday evening. But we didn't want to give up the opportunity that we at Sprouts just get to have just girl time with her. So she's back today. Drea has been, she attended Occidental College in Los Angeles and got married after graduation. And attended medical school at University of Washington. She has been at Women's Healthcare Associates in Tualatin ever since 1994 when she graduated from OHSU. She has two college-age kids. And she does a lot of things. She volunteers as a volunteer medical director for Pregnancy Resource Center and serves on Young Lives and Young Lives committees. She's led surgical mission trips abroad. She loves to run, travel, cook, adventure. She's just got so much life. It's been so fun to get to know Drea. And I am excited that she is going to talk to us today about intimacy and marriage. Probably many of you in this room are familiar with her and have maybe even been a patient of hers, but we are privileged to have her. So come on up, Drea, and I would love to just pray for our time. Yay! You have a fan base. So, Lord, I just want to thank you so much for this just sister in Christ. She loves you, Lord, and her life is yours, and it's just apparent in the ways that she pours out into the lives of others in her profession and in her personal life and in her family and here today at Sprouts. We're just so blessed that she would be willing to give time and energy and pour her heart into sharing with us today. So I just pray for this room full of women. Lord, this is a topic that really only you know the stories of each woman in this room, and I pray that you would just cover our hearts, you'd protect our hearts, you'd open our hearts to what you have to teach us, maybe set us on a path of healing if that's what's required, Lord, but we just pray you'd meet us in the places where only you know, as Dr. Olmsted just shares, and help us to learn and just draw one step closer to you, whatever that looks like. And so may you be glorified in this time, and in your name, amen.
Good morning. It's so nice to be here. Thanks for letting me come, and I'm excited to share with you. I hope this opens up some great conversation. I would love to start with a little story and a little suggestion. So John, my husband, and I have been married 33 years, and when we had been married 10 years, his suggestion was, let's be more intentional about our anniversary celebrations. How about if I own the even years and you own the odd years? And it's been awesome. So it could be, and that includes childcare, so it could be a dinner out. But whoever year it is, they have to figure out the childcare and where you're going. Or it could be a night away, or a weekend away, or we've been a couple weeks away. But we just figure it out. And we know that we own it. So it's super fun. So it may or may not fall on the actual anniversary day, right? Because life happens. So 2 years ago, it didn't fall on the actual anniversary day. We had planned an anniversary celebration a few weeks after our real anniversary. So on a real anniversary, we thought, well, what better to take our teenage kids out to dinner? Doesn't everybody do that on their anniversary? We actually had a great time, and we got home. But, you know, it was our anniversary, so we wanted to have a little love. And, well, our son was great because he took off with friends, as 18-year-olds do. And our daughter, Sophie, was 16 at the time. And I don't know if you guys have ever or can imagine trying to have sex with a teenager in the house. But it doesn't work. And our daughter, bless her sweet soul, often would knock on the door, Mom, Dad, oh, sick, not again. And it wasn't like we were doing it a lot anyway. But anyway, we knew we had to get her out of the house. Exactly, gross. So thankfully, she just had earned her driver's license, so we said, hey, why don't you go to Target, and you can get this list of whatever stupid stuff we didn't even, whatever, just get out of the house. She's like, oh, sweet. So she's out of there. By this time, my husband's upstairs watching TV, super sexy. Who thinks a husband watching TV is really sexy? But I put on my best self. And, you know, my disclaimer is I am not a sexual Duracell bunny. I am just not. So, but I put on my best self and I walk up to the TV room and I start taking my dress off and I say, hey, you want to have a little fun? And he was like, well, yeah. I mean, I had never done that before. And so he jumps up and I start running naked to the bedroom and I clip my little toe on the stair newel. Have you guys ever done that? Okay, it hurts so bad, and I'm literally hopping into the bedroom naked. I lay on the bed, I'm grabbing my foot, and there will be no sex tonight. So that was our anniversary. It was wonderful. And then the kids heard the story, and of course now it's a famous story in our family about how mom hurt her toe. So I love the quote that says, fostering a healthy sex life is like pouring super glue all over your relationship. I would love to start with that as the thought. The expert on sex is God. In the message, I love the version we all have heard, 1 Corinthians 13. It's the wedding love verse, but I love it in the message where it says, love does not demand its own way. It puts the other person first and the other person's needs first. So before we dive into talking about the emotional piece of this and the physical piece of this, I need to acknowledge it makes me tear up because I know there are many of you in the room who are struggling or have struggled. Maybe you're in an abusive relationship. Maybe you are a victim of rape or sexual abuse in the past. Maybe you're in a really awful place right now in your marriage. And I just want to say I'm sorry. And I also want to acknowledge this could be a really hard discussion. And my comments today are meant for people mostly in a healthy place. Of course, I'm going to discuss unhealthy places. I also want you guys to know there are wonderful resources to help you in any of those really dark spaces. And I really pray that none of my comments are in any way offensive to anybody. So let's talk about what women need in a marriage relationship. Now, obviously we're not all the same people, but there's some general themes. Like, we need affection, right? We need non-sexual touch. How many people love it? Just raise your hand if you love it when your husband comes up and grabs your boobs and grabs your butt. And how many of you really love it when they grab your butt in public? Yeah, right? No, no. How about a hug? How about an arm around? How about a handhold, right? I mean, most women really appreciate that. Most women also appreciate affirmation. They want to hear compliments. They want to hear words of encouragement. And women need emotional connection. Amen? Yeah, that's a biggie. That's probably one of the biggest. So my friend, I love this when you talk about all the things that are on our plate. So on the book list, there's a book called Relationship Reset, and it's written by a friend of mine whose daughter actually was my daughter's freshman roommate in college, and she's awesome. But this is her quote. What's for dinner, you ask? Well, I guess I'll just nurse this baby and change all these diapers and wrestle this house from the grip of entropy and play Legos for the 10 millionth time and also cook a nourishing meal for everyone. Hey, honey, after dinner, clean up, the bath, and bedtime routine marathon, let's have meaningful sex. Please grope me more than usual because I haven't been felt up enough today. Women, I know, right? Women also need spiritual intimacy. I mean, I think many women think praying together and going to church, maybe not all of us, but a lot of women think that's a really great form of foreplay. Women need romance, like love notes, those sort of things. I know I'm speaking to the choir. Women need to see their husband committed to their family. Also, it's a beautiful thing when you see your husband engaged with your kids. Women also need help, as referenced in that quote, right? So, true story, couple goes to the gynecologist, and the guy is just exasperated because his wife has, like, no libido. And he's like, doc, I'll do anything to help her with her libido. Anything. And the doc's like, really? Anything? And the guy's like, yeah, what is it? What is it? And he says, vacuum. So their idea of foreplay is often very different from our idea of foreplay. So what do men need in a relationship? Well, they need mutual satisfaction. They actually need to know that they are pleasing their wife in bed. And it's really hard for them when they don't feel like they can do a good job that way. They need sexual connection, and it's super tricky because most women need intimate emotional foreplay to be into the mood, and most men need sex to become intimately emotional, right? So often it's this, but it's a great topic of conversation to bring home to your spouse. Men need to hear the word yes. And if it's not yes, can it be followed by a yes? For example, no, not tonight, honey. How about tomorrow morning? Now, I also know it's hard to have sex in the morning when you have toddlers, just saying. But that kind of an idea, no, but yes. And men need initiation by the wife. So this is also a tricky one because I don't know if you guys have seen the diagrams of brains. Like, men's brain thinks about sex, food, sports. I mean, it's a little... But it's actually kind of funny. You know, women's brain has like 40 million things going on in it, right? So most women don't think about sex a ton. But one of the things to consider is intentionally thinking about sex. So whatever that looks like for you, putting it in your phone, writing it on the chalkboard in your cute little kitchen, whatever it is, right? So a couple years ago after I gave this talk, I was seeing a patient. She wasn't a patient of mine, but I walked into the room and she's like, has this gorgeous pregnant belly. And she goes, Dr. Olmsted, I'm so excited to see you again. I went to your talk about 9 months ago, and this is a TS baby for Think Sex. So also maybe think about wearing some cute lingerie underneath your regular clothes. You know, just little things that might get your head going that way. But it has to be intentional. For most people, it's not automatic. Men also really need affirmation. We all need affirmation and respect. But men, one of the worst things we can do is to criticize our husband, especially in public. Really think about that one. That's a biggie for guys. You get that passive-aggressive wife who's sort of digging at the husband in public. If you have an issue, talk about it in private. And I would challenge you to think about sex as something we give and not something we always get. In marriage, it's never his problem or her problem, it's our problem. So you need to own it together. And I love this quote by Kevin Lehman. That's another great book on the list, Between the Sheets. And the quote is, the best communication of your life begins when your desire to understand your mate is greater than your desire to be understood. I'm gonna say it one more time. The best communication of your life begins when your desire to understand your mate is greater than your desire to be understood. Okay, question. Raise your hand if you can guess what one of the most common enemies of sex is. Just shout it out. Pornography, breastfeeding, two big ones. They don't necessarily go together, just saying, yeah. What else?
Fatigue.
Fatigue, yes. Fatigue is a huge one. And you know, sometimes there's no way about it. I mean, you guys all have little kids. You don't have the option of signing up for a night's sleep all the time. But it is a big one. And so when you go home, you could mention that to your husband, that one of the greatest things he could do besides help is to give you a little time alone. Let you go do whatever you need to do for however it is, how long you can figure it out, whether it's 30 minutes or 3 hours, to get some time away from the kids. And that's how maybe you can refuel yourself so you can have fuel for him. I'm going to challenge you, though, too, that we often, as moms, tend to overdo it. I know I'm super guilty about that. I will do all these good things, and I will leave nothing left for my husband and kids at the end of the day. But yet, I feel like I've helped a lot of other people through the day. So I want to encourage you to flip that and have that energy to be able to pour into your marriage, because the ripple effect is huge. This is a quote from Kevin Lehman, and I think it says it really well. Do you know how much your sex life affects your children? You can fool adults, but you can't fool kids. They have a built-in radar. They know when things are not well between mommy and daddy. They sense disconnect. They sense the anger on mom's face when dad comes up from behind to give her a hug and she snarls, "Not now, I'm busy." They will sense that coldness toward mom. So I really want to urge you not to wait until you feel like it, because especially those with little kids, babies, it may be a couple years. I mean, this is also assuming that your relationship is in a safe place, right? Many women are like, "Well, I don't feel like it." Well, that's going to be a conversation I'm going to invite you to have with your husband and invite you to pray about. I would love to start with a practical suggestion. So my friend Jen Emquist, who wrote Relationship Reset, she coined the term epic kiss. So if you guys heard my talk last year, you cannot have a vote in this. Does anybody know how long the famous movie kisses like on the Titanic and Casablanca, anybody know how long those kisses lasted for? Just yell it out. 8 seconds?
2.5 minutes.
Oh, gosh. I know, exactly. I'm just picturing the slobber coming down. Close. 6 seconds. Okay, how many of you were at my talk last year, or when John and I did the talk, have tried doing an epic kiss with your husband? How'd it go, Angie? It was uncomfortable. I know. Okay, I love it. And sometimes it's like, but consider it. Consider a 6-second kiss with your husband every day. Consider an epic kiss every day. And sometimes it will just frustrate him because you're going to do it on your way out the door and he's going to want way more, but that's kind of fun too. So consider it. Just a good challenge. So we talked about more relationship stuff. I want to start talking a little bit more about what women need to enjoy sex, which obviously a lot of it has to do with the relationship piece. Again, we need to feel loved and valued. We need to feel respected. But we also need a romantic atmosphere. And we also need to be understood and cuddled, a little of that non-sexual touch to begin with. And really important, again, back to the teenager, but it also applies to the toddler, please put a lock on your bedroom door. Because if you don't have a lock where you're trying to be intimate with your husband, you are not going to relax. Or you're going to be walked in on, and then you'll never relax. So, and what does a man need in order to enjoy sex? Well, a man really wants to be needed, okay? And he needs a place. It's a short list. It's bad. So I would encourage you, as you are trying to make him feel needed and you're trying to get the things out of your head that are kind of irritating you about him, to focus on what he does right. Because, you know, our husbands really do love us, and if we just give them a little bit, they are going to enter into a beautiful place with us most of the time. Again, lots of generalizations. But really consider thinking about the things he does right. Focus on those things. Take your heart away from the bitter places. God gave me something wonderful years ago when I was when I would get frustrated with John, and I would just think, just love him. Just love him. And honestly, it's helped a lot. I love, Jen Elmquist talks about the brain as a sticky note. And she says, the brain is like a sticky note with negative thoughts that stores them as future reminders of what we should avoid. This means if you don't intentionally manage your thoughts, when you're feeling negative about your spouse, your brain will eventually be grooved full of the negative tracks, and you'll be thinking more of the negative experiences in your relationship instead of the positive. So working with the negative feelings and thoughts right away, rather than letting them accumulate and becoming passive-aggressive and bitter, is not only a good brain workout, but it's also essential if we want to remain happily together. The catch is that you're the only one who can have control over your brain thoughts. So a lot of people ask the question about how much sex is normal. What's normal sexual frequency? And I actually used to answer that question when I would give this talk, and I've stopped answering the question. And the reason is because for every couple it's different, and for every season it's different. And I would just invite you to have the conversation with your husband about what that looks like for both of you. Unfortunately, there is not a quick fix. How many of you were really hoping you could come in and I'd tell you about a pill and everything would be better, right? There isn't really one. I mean, there's some fake bad things out there we can talk about in the Q&A, but there really isn't a pill that helps with libido. I mean, most of the time, it has to do with the things I've already talked about, environmental and emotional connection issues. Now, of course, people with chronic medical diseases, depression, anxiety, high blood pressure, some medications that you take for those things can influence your sex life. A biggie that has to be addressed is alcohol and drug abuse because, you know, neither of those things foster a good sex life. In fact, it makes me think about my friend in medical school. I don't know if you guys remember that song by, it was Jimmy Buffett, Why Don't We Get Drunk and Screw? Do you guys remember that song? Or maybe you're too young. But my girlfriend would say, why don't we get drunk and fall asleep? It doesn't really work. It doesn't really work, and getting drunk isn't a good idea anyway. But the thing I want to address, and when we were, John and I did this talk last year, it was actually really a cool God thing that that Jamie mentioned doing this together. We had a really good time creating the talk together, and John did a whole piece on pornography. And I'm just going to touch on it a little, but I want to really emphasize it's a big thing, and it's just getting bigger. So pornography it's totally accessible, like in your pocket. It's totally anonymous. You can erase. People have found ways to work around erasing their searches, and it's totally addictive. And then what's worse is in our culture and in our city of Pornland, I'm not kidding, it has been called Pornland, it's also accepted. And so a lot of people have confusion around the issue because I think mostly because of the acceptance. It's not such a hush-hush thing, it's kind of a cool thing. And it's super scary to me, super scary. I see lots of brokenness in my office because of pornography. So couple of things, couple of myths. One is, I only do it occasionally. Well, just like anything that could potentially be addictive, only doing it occasionally can lead to doing it more and can lead to then going to the strip shop and then maybe going to the naked lingerie bar and then this and that. So only doing it occasionally is not okay. Also, to say, well, I have it under control. Well, I would say if you are doing it at all, it's controlling you. And the other thing is, it won't affect my marriage, myth. So we've all seen studies of when you have that imprinting of that photoshopped, airbrushed, beautiful body that none of us have, and how those images can get stuck in our head, whether it's us having an image of a man that way or our husbands having images of women that way. It gets in the middle of the marriage, specifically the sex life. And more, for example, a man looks at female pornography, the more he has expectations of what his wife is supposed to do, perform, look like, and it absolutely is a huge, huge barrier and a super dark place in this issue of intimacy. Have the conversation with your husband. Don't assume it's not happening. Okay, so we're going to talk about masturbation. Because why not? So 94% of men masturbate, and probably the other 6% are lying. It happens. And sort of really on the heels of pornography is it's not really the masturbation that's the issue. It's what is going on behind the scenes. Is he planning for it, looking forward to it? That's not a healthy thing. Is he masturbating to, and I shouldn't say he, I should say he or she, because it's all of us, masturbating to images that are not your spouse? That's not healthy. So the conversation, I would encourage you, shouldn't necessarily be absolutely no masturbation, because that's pretty tough, especially for most guys, and it can be tough for a lot of women. The conversation should be the questions around that. So let's get to more fun stuff. So just like we enjoy a variety of food in a variety of places, think about enjoying a variety of sex in a variety of places, right? It doesn't always have to be in the bedroom. It doesn't always have to be at night. In fact, for those of you who can make it work, testosterone, even in young men, but certainly in middle-aged men, is way better in the morning. I know it's difficult with the toddlers. Maybe it's nap time, you know, if it's a Saturday or whatever. So just think about being creative. So a couple years ago, my good friend decided to get creative, and she had her in-laws have this really cute houseboat on the river, and they were able to be there on and off while the in-laws were south for the winter. So my friend texted her husband and said, "I'm serving you dinner naked tonight." And he was psyched, of course. Like, who gets that text? So he's psyched. He, like, quickly puts on his bright orange Converse and his bathrobe, and he drives across town, opens the door, so psyched to see his naked wife, and there are 50 of his closest friends right there. "Happy birthday! Happy 50th birthday! Surprise!" And he's like, "Eh." So he runs over to her, gives her a hug, and he says, "What am I supposed to do now?" And she said, "Well, just have fun." So he turned around, he undoes his bathrobe, and he flashes his Superman boxers to the crowd. They actually had a good night, but I thought it was a cute story. And she gave me permission to share it. So let's talk a little bit about anatomy. So again, I'm going to be mentioning some words, but it's just good to put them out in the open. Clitoris. I'm going to say it again. Clitoris, okay? God gave women a clitoris for one reason, and it's sexual pleasure. There's no other reason that we have one. The crazy thing about the clitoris is there's no natural lubrication around the clitoris. So most women can have an orgasm. I'm going to say that word one more time too. Orgasm. We're just going to put it out there. Most women can have an orgasm within 20 minutes of clitoral stimulation. Here's a big myth. The myth is that men and women orgasm at the same time during vaginal intercourse. Many women don't. And it's okay if you don't. Hallelujah, right? No big deal. But most women are able to orgasm with clitoral stimulation. You usually need lubricant, whether that's saliva. Other lubricants that I usually recommend are Astroglide. That's more of a KY water-soluble. But also, some people really find that vitamin E oil or other oils work better. So experiment. It's messy. Sex is messy. Get over it. So trying to figure out where your pleasure spots are with your husband, I think most guys will find that super exciting. Now, most of you have babies, so I'm guessing that that's been a thing for some people in the room that you've experienced trying to do that together. Other pleasure spots include, of course, nipples, earlobes, neck, thighs. I mean, there's lots of other places, sometimes just in the vagina and up is the space. So if you are making love like in missionary position to put a pillow underneath your bottom and kind of tilt up, then sometimes that spot is hit a little bit more. So experiment with positions and angles and things, and you might find some things that you haven't experienced before, and it could be okay. If you have never had an orgasm, then you should see your gynecologist, because usually there's a reason why. If you have occasional pain during sex, just occasional, most of the time it's because it's during ovulation. So when the egg is released, there's a little fluid that circulates in the abdominal cavity most of the time, and that can just cause some discomfort. There's other reasons for pain that I'll get to, but essentially if it's just an occasional pain, any position where your legs are together, you can control the depth of penetration, and usually then it's not uncomfortable. But clearly if it is uncomfortable, neither of you will enjoy it. And if your husband's enjoying that, there's something wrong, actually. So you need to stop if it's really hurting, for sure. Here's another one. Anal sex. Not okay. Not okay to have anal sex. And I want you guys to tell your friends and the teenage girls you see and everybody around, because it is a thing, because a lot of, especially teenage girls, because they think they're still virgins if they have anal sex. We are not created that way. I mean, there's a reason the clitoris is closer to the vagina than the rectum. The rectum is full of bacteria. Sorry, I know you're eating. And you can get, you can have problems with incontinence of stool and gas and all kinds of physical things. But I also think equally as important, it can be an emotional thing for a lot of women too. It can be shameful. It can feel dirty. So not okay. Have the conversation. Sorry to have to bring it up, but you invited me. Okay. I'm going to talk about a couple other more diagnosed problems with sex. So there's this thing that's called vestibulitis or vulvar vestibulitis. And what it is when it hurts with insertion. It hurts to put a tampon in. It hurts to put a penis in. That part of the opening of the vagina. And most of the time, it's the lower part. And most of the time, it's in women who have had babies. And most of the time, it goes away. Sometimes we see it postpartum, but most of the time it goes away. If it doesn't go away and you're through the postpartum and you're through the breastfeeding period, then that's something you should definitely see your gynecologist about, because there are different creams and treatments and last resort surgery and things that can be done about that. But that's not normal for it to hurt that bad. A very common problem I see in my office is called vaginismus, and that's kind of when it hurts not on insertion, but it hurts like halfway in, kind of that feeling of like, don't go any further. And the reason is the vagina is a muscle, and the vagina contracts. And if you've had pain with sex before, you can have involuntary contractions of the vagina, and that's what's giving you that feeling of don't go any further. So what do you do about it? Well, the good news is there's lots of good treatment, and most of the time people can get over it. It may involve counseling, because for some women, the reason that they're having it is because of a really horrific past. But for some reason, it's just because they had one or two painful sex episodes, maybe postpartum or something. There are exercises that can be done. There's pelvic physical therapy, which, as weird as that sounds, it's actually not kinky weird. It's actually super helpful. There's a number of groups in town, but it's somebody you'd want your gynecologist to refer you to the good people in town. And they do biofeedback and lots of teaching and teaching you how to relax the pelvic muscle, kind of reverse Kegels, if you will, that kind of a thing. And that's probably, I would say, the most common reason that I see women who have pain with sex is vaginismus. You guys have heard of endometriosis. So endometriosis, actually, pain with endometriosis is actually not as common as you would think. Women, endometriosis is weird. You can have a little tiny bit of endometriosis and have a ton of pain, or you can have a ton of endometriosis and not have much pain at all. Endometriosis is only diagnosed by surgery. And it typically is, you suspect it in somebody who has horrific cramps, pain with bowel movements, pain with urination, pain with sex, and it doesn't necessarily mean that you have super heavy periods. It's just a lot of chronic pain issue, and with surgery it can be helped. It's probably one of the least common reasons that people have pain with intercourse, though, so we don't like invite you to have surgery the moment you step in the office to talk about this. Some women have an enlarged uterus. Many women who have had babies get, their uterus changes and it becomes a little spongier, and they develop something called adenomyosis. And what that is you guys know the car sponges, the big sponges you wash cars with? I kind of think about it like that. Like it's kind of sick. It blows up with blood instead of water, and then it kind of squeezes out. So when it blows up right before your period, you feel really heavy, bloated, pressure, icky, and then you just bleed like stink. with your period. And I know. And there's ways that you can deal with that, but it also can cause pain with sex because it's sort of that feeling that you have a little bit of most of us before their period, only way worse. And other reasons for an enlarged uterus might be a fibroid, which is a little muscle, benign muscle tumor in the uterus, and they can be little, which would not cause pain, but they can be, or enlargement, but they can also be big, like the size of an orange. So again, if you're having pain and it's all the time, that's not normal. See your doctor for sure. Another one that I see a lot of is atrophic vaginitis or thin vaginal skin. I see it in women my age and older, and of course we see it a ton in the postpartum period. So what happens when you're postpartum is that your estrogen level actually has to plummet in order for your breast milk to come in. So how many people right now have low estrogen? Who's breastfeeding? Okay, yeah. You guys all have really low estrogen right now. So don't expect yourself to feel super sexual because really physiologically you don't have it. And when your estrogen level is low, the vagina is thin and dry and it needs definitely lubrication in order to function when you're breastfeeding. Once you're kind of done breastfeeding, it tends to come back to the pre-pregnancy state because your estrogen level comes back to normal. Let's talk about sex and pregnancy. Who's pregnant in the room? Sweet. Okay, one person's going to have sex tonight. No, I'm kidding. sex is, it can be great in pregnancy as long as you're not puking your guts out or dealing with super swollen feet at the other end of the spectrum. But it can be awesome in pregnancy because you have 50% more blood volume. So there's lots going on down here. So there's usually not a reason that you can't have sex in pregnancy from a medical perspective, and if there is, your doctor will make it really clear to you. But sex in pregnancy is great, with the exception that it's super common, if you orgasm and you're pregnant, to have contractions. So it's sort of like, not good. So that can be common, but there's no reason to not have sex in pregnancy. Some husbands have a thing like they don't want to, and that's kind of a separate issue. But from a medical perspective, there's no reason you can't have sex in pregnancy. Back to the postpartum too. Postpartum is a tricky sexual time because we are not created to procreate right after we have a baby, right? Like these are a factory. There's nothing sexual going on here if you're breastfeeding. And this, like I said, is dry. And this is exhausted, right? So it's really, really a difficult, difficult time. And it's even more difficult for women who struggle with postpartum depression because they have no desire, and they could be really anxious and irritable, and it's a really, that can be difficult. And then if they're put on medication, the medication can help in a lot of ways, but some medication for depression makes it more difficult to have an orgasm. It actually doesn't affect libido, but it makes it more difficult to have an orgasm. So postpartum is a tricky time, and I just want to encourage you women right now who are in that state that this too shall pass, and most of the time you do get through it and it gets better. But again, have those conversations with your husband about physically and environmentally. This is not my most sexual time, but let's figure out what your needs and my needs are in it. I don't think any, well, raise your hand if you've ever heard of Ruth Westheimer. So she's no longer living, but she was a short little Jewish woman, basically the first sex therapist, and that was when people really didn't talk about sex, but it was kind of in the 60s and 70s. And I picked up her book at a garage sale a number of years ago. And I loved it. I thought it was so good. And one of the things she talks about is your thought life when you're having sex. And I'm going to tell you a story about this. So I went on a trip with the girlfriends 5 years ago or something, and we were all joking about, okay, what were you thinking about last night when you were making love to your husband? Because, of course, you make love to your husband before you're leaving for a few days, right? At least most of the time you do. And we all agreed that we were not thinking about him, that we were thinking about what we were packing and do we have the kids set up and, right? Right? Or how often do you have sex and you're thinking about the grocery list or the to-do list or what are you going to wear tomorrow or what am I making for dinner or whatever, right? So often. Okay, so
So try this. Honestly, it works really well. So try to get your head out of that space and think about what it is that you love to do, that like that turns you on, that gets you jazzed. And whether it's laying on the beach or running on the beach or skiing down a hill or having the wind in your hair or whatever it is, think about that and really focus on that and focus on how you're feeling during the sex, that it's feeling good. Go to those places. And when the grocery list does this, push it away. Get it out of there because it's not a good libido helper at all. So, yeah. Also remember, it's really important to take care of your body. It's really important to try and rest. It's really important to exercise most days. It's really important to eat well. Because if you don't respect and love your own body, it's really hard to want to give your body to your husband. So don't forget that. And remember to keep the main thing the main thing. Put God first. He gave us sex. It's super fun in the right place, at the right time, with the right person. And ask for God to help fulfill the places where in your sexual life with your husband that you think are lacking. Ask God to help you in that. If you're comfortable praying with your husband, pray together about it. And you're going to be amazed at what God will do. And I'm going to end with this quote, and then we'll have some Q&A time. If you keep communication and commitment to each other a high priority, and if you honor and respect each other, you will have love for a lifetime. And somewhere, it always makes me cry, and somewhere along the way, you'll find yourselves looking at each other saying, you know what a privilege it is to share life's joys and heartbreaks with you, the person I know and love and understand more than anyone in the world. I pray and hope that for each one of you. Thank you. You guys can stretch. Jamie's gonna bring some of the cards up. Are there? Okay. It's good.
They're gonna bring the basket to me, but I just want to point out thank you. This was, I mean, just so much to think about. And we have a basket full of questions, so we'll be here, which is great. On your table, there are, and you don't have to look at them right now, but just as resources, there's the suggested reading list that Drea mentioned, but also there's a handout that of questions that if you read them now, you might get embarrassed, but you can take them home to talk about them with your husband. Maybe you won't get embarrassed and you could talk about them with your girlfriends today, but that hopefully will just be some conversation starters or some suggestions how to take some of what she's sharing and what we'll talk about in Q&A home to prompt some conversation with your husband. So that's what you have in front of you. The basket is coming. When we ask the questions, do you want me to read the question and you answer it or just read the question? Because it just needs to be spoken in the microphone.
Okay, got it. And I'm not going to organize them, so if there's some that I feel like I've already answered, then I'll... Okay. Things feel loose down there after a couple of kids, though hubby is still happy. Can I do anything to tighten things up? Yeah, that does happen. I mean, after a couple of kids, things do open up definitely more. I would say what you can do to tighten things up, if it's really bad, you could do pelvic physical therapy. You can also practice, in fact, I meant to say this in my talk, practice doing your Kegels during sex because your husband's going to think it's really fun. And then also he can tell you if you're doing it right, right? So this Kegel exercise is to squeeze the muscles like you're trying to stop your stream of urine. You could start with it on the toilet, but it's actually better to not do it when you're actually peeing. Squeeze the muscles like you're, everybody do it right now because, you know, you're all trying it. Squeeze the muscles like you're trying to stop your stream of urine. Don't squeeze your butt muscles. Don't squeeze your tummy muscles. Just that vaginal muscle. Hold it for 10 seconds and relax. That's one Kegel. If you can do as many as you can in a day, it's silly. It's stoplights when you, I don't know, everybody has a thing that they try and remember. But if you can do a set of 10, two or three times a day, it actually really does help. The other thing that helps is Pilates. Can get that whole pelvic floor back. It might not shrink the opening of the vagina for people who've had a couple kids, but it does help get the pelvic floor strength better.
Oh, yeah, oral sex. And I actually meant to mention this too. So oral sex is totally okay as long as it's okay with both of you. So there's nothing wrong with it. There's nothing dirty about it. You're not going to get some weird disease from it. Also, you know, sex between the breasts, if nothing else is working, works. Sex between the thighs, sounds weird, but actually it's a thing. And all of that's totally fine. You just have to have that mutual respect. You need to have that conversation as a couple about what feels okay to either one of you. But there's nothing wrong with oral sex. Good sex life and intimacy while struggling with miscarriage and infertility. Oh, so hard. So hard. Yeah. I don't know how to answer that. Infertility and miscarriage, repetitive miscarriage, is devastating. It's absolutely devastating. I actually went through a journey of infertility myself, and I guess in the long run I know why, because God has given me a compassion for those women who are going through it. What I would say in that is think about the words that were spoken today and acknowledge also that you're in a super sad place and maybe seek professional help and counseling during the time, because whenever there's some things that are really hard, what you don't want is for it to separate you and your husband. You want to be able to continue to foster a super healthy emotional and physical relationship together. So that's where I would start. God, counseling. In postpartum, when having sex again after 6 weeks, if it hurts to have sex, how often should you be trying to have sex in order for the pain to go away? Is it like a, quote, power through the pain type of thing, or should you not push through the pain or tightness? No, you shouldn't push through it. Some people aren't ready to have sex 6 weeks after they have a baby because they had a lot of stitches and it just is not quite ready. And so what I would say is, I always tell women this, have a glass of wine, get a lot of lubricant, put it all over him and you, and go really slow. And most of the time, it works. If it doesn't work, then wait a week or two and try it again. And if after 8 to 10 weeks it's still painful, go see your doctor, because it shouldn't be. And don't power through, because the pain is telling you there's something wrong. The pain is telling you you're not healed yet. My husband is more adventurous, but not over the top, than me when it comes to sex, and I'm not. Am I in the wrong when I shut him down? That's a really hard thing. I know a lot of, you know, then it kind of comes back a little bit to pornography, but just a little bit to like our culture, our movie culture, and how people have sex in the movies and on TV. I mean, honestly, that's not normal life. But a lot of people, men and women, think it is about, you know, the whole seduction piece and this and that. It's great when it happens, but it's not a normal practical thing to have expectations. So I would say for those of you who have a husband that is more adventuresome, to invite him to have realistic expectations, but also to meet him halfway, and maybe you can, even though you don't feel like it, find something cute to put on. Because sometimes, yeah, and find something you feel really good on to put on. Go buy a new lubricant that has a scent you like better. You know, do some things differently. Grab him and have sex with him in a different room of the house. Even if you do that once, he's going to think you're the queen bee, you know? So it doesn't have to be like this whole thing. And I certainly wouldn't go crazy with like S&M or anything like that. But you know, just make it fun and make it a little bit creative. And he's going to think, wow, this is okay, hopefully. As a busy mom of littles, it's hard to imagine feeling anything at bedtime other than sheer exhaustion. I don't want to lose connection to my husband, but how? And when does it get easier? Oh, absolutely. It's so hard, and you're so tired, and like Jen Emquist says, you've been felt up all day long. Yes, it does get easier. I'm here to tell you, it gets easier. You don't have to wait for your kids to go to college, but I also will tell you that that's a kind of a fun time. They're not knocking on the door anymore. But with littles, it's difficult. And I think, again, you just need to be creative. A lot of times, nighttime, it might be the only time you have alone, and I get that. But a lot of times, it's not the best time for intimacy. And it's certainly not a great time for serious conversation, because that doesn't end well sometimes either, right? Because you're both so tired. So I don't know
if any of you have the privilege of being able to be creative with timing. But that's what I would say, is to be creative with timing, A, B, to have the expectation for yourself that you're probably not going to feel like it. And that's where the put the lingerie on, think sex, you know, some of those things are. And sometimes, honestly, at this stage of life, you actually have to just try and plan it a little bit. But it is, I'm going to acknowledge, it's a super exhausting time of life. It just is. Do the best you can. Some people say, huh? There you go. I love it, Ken. That's great. Some people say the decade of a woman's sexual peak is in her 40s. Is that mostly because her kids are more grown up? Or is there medical reasons for this? Okay, there's absolutely no medical reasons for this at all. And no, I don't necessarily think it is in your 40s. I think your 40s can be wonderful, but they also can be a time when women have more bleeding issues and stuff. So don't wait to think it's going to get better. I know. Work on it now. Work on it now with the grace that you give yourself around this period, with the really littles, when you're not sleeping at night and stuff. Of course, that's the hard time. But when you get to a place when your kids are in elementary school and they actually are sleeping through the night, you know, that can be a lovely time. It can be a lovely time. And again, think about not giving your husband your leftovers. Right? You're volunteering at school all day, you're holding down a job, you're helping this, you're helping that, and then you come home and you're like, I have nothing. Be really careful about that. I'm speaking to me when I say that too, just saying. What would you suggest for somebody who had sex outside of marriage and it seems so organic and natural, and now that I'm married, it seems more like it has to be scheduled and planned? It's hard to forget how easy it used to be, and it's frustrating that now in marriage it's less desired, and it doesn't come as naturally or organically. Yeah, I think it is really hard because marriage brings with it kids, which are a blessing and also a challenge, and marriage brings with it all of the places of life, like bills and cleaning the house and who's doing the car and who's helping with this and that. So it's all the practicalities of life. And that's why it's not going to be as naturally organic as it was before. Sex is a beautiful thing created by God, and we have to be intentional about it. And we could just let it go and just let it happen, or we can actually stop today, tonight, and have a conversation with our husband, grab some of these books, read them together, get together with some girlfriends, read the book together, and keep the conversation going. That's what I would encourage you to do. Sex is not better outside of marriage at all. It makes women anxious, and it causes, of course, you all know this, a lot of problems. But don't go looking for sex outside of marriage. Make your marriage awesome on the inside. And I mentioned this before, but Jamie also has a list of counselors and good resources for you guys. After many happy years of marriage, how do you spice up intimacy in the bedroom? Christian books and resources to read. So the books on the list, I think, are really my favorites. I really like Jen Elmquist's book. I quoted from that a lot today. And Kevin Lehman's books are excellent. My husband's read both of those. And from a guy's perspective, he thinks they're excellent as well. But I also would say, I have to tell you guys a story about this. Just happened a couple weeks ago, and I was telling my friend Heather, and she's like, well, you better share this. So my husband... What John was saying, well, okay, well, can we have sex tomorrow morning? And I said, no, because I have to exercise. Because my work schedule was crazy, and I hadn't exercised. I usually try and exercise 5 days a week, and I hadn't exercised in 3 days, and it wasn't good. And I said, I have to exercise. I totally hurt his feelings, because he's like, you're putting exercise ahead of sex? And I said, well, here's the thing. I would love to exercise tomorrow morning, and I'd love to be with you tomorrow night, but I know that I will not exercise at night. I'm too tired. I need to exercise. So I'm telling you guys that story because I think it's important for us to realize what we need, right? It's important because for years, when I had little kids, I was like, I don't know what I need. I don't even have time to think about what I need. But it's important for you to stop and think about what it is that you might need in order to feel like you can spice it up in the bedroom. I don't want to be resentful at John because I didn't get my exercise in. And for me, that's not just exercise. It's my prayer time. It's my process time. It's all of those things. I don't want to be resentful at him. I needed to tell him what I needed and then follow it with a yes. And it worked out. I think I answered this one. The question is suggestions for dealing with intrusive thoughts during sex. I can't be the only one. I love that. Yeah, that Ruth Westheimer. Do you think about, really spend some time thinking about what are the things that you love to do? And it actually really does work. Thanks. Between kids, dinner, house, work, and life, I never want to have sex. Yeah, I get that. I've heard all the typical advice, schedule it, prioritize it, etc. Do you have any tips to bring back the desire for it? I would say the thing that has helped, not that you have time, I'm asking you to do something else for time, I really would look at these books. They really can spice things up. There are some really good suggestions in there, and if you are sharing some of the suggestions and thoughts with your husband, I think that that can be really helpful. And I also would say, ask God to give you the desire for sex. He would love nothing more than to help you in your marriage. Pray about it. Give it to God. Surrender it. And you'll be amazed at what happens, because he wants that for you, for sure. What if I struggle with deep insecurities about my body? That's a biggie. That's a biggie, and a biggie also because in our culture, everybody's beautiful on TV, like I said, right? And that just stinks. And I would say most people have a bunch of insecurities about their body. So let's just talk, and there will be questions too, but let's just talk about social media as a beginning, right? Social media is not a healthy thing for so many women who have significant body image issues. And so stop it. Nobody's making you look on Facebook or Instagram. Stop it. Maybe you don't need to be watching certain things on TV. We all have control about what we watch and read. And some of those things for some of us are not life-giving. So I would really look at that. And then the other thing is I would really seek counseling, because some of those body issues stem from way back things. Maybe somebody said something to you a long time ago that you haven't really even thought about. You need to dig it up, surrender it, and move on. And, you know, any good counselor is well-equipped to deal with that. But I also want to encourage you that it is common. I'm not going to make you guys raise your hand, but I would say if I asked anybody in the room if they have a body issue, I'd be surprised if anybody didn't raise their hand in this room. I see it every day in my office. So it's definitely real, and you're not alone, but there's different degrees of it, for sure.
Can I add something to that?
Yeah.
In terms of like social media and stuff like that, I think one thing, and you can take this or leave this, I mean, everybody's like thinking about internet use as their own, but there's actually a lot of dialogue like in bigger society about this now, and there are some really cool like either people you can follow or sites you can go to that really do emphasize like seeing yourself, like body positivity, like Google mm-hmm. body positivity, you know, like it can
good
be
idea.
So empowering to see like quotes or like, you know, women who don't fit the typical picture of who you would think of as a runner or a yoga teacher or whatever, and they're like doing it in their strong body and feeling good, and it can be so inspiring to be like, these people look all different ways, and some people have been able to tap into like feeling more confident and just more, just able to love their bodies more, and that can be like a way that you can use social media and stuff to empower yourself mm-hmm. and put those people in front of your face. Like, look at this woman who, you know, you wouldn't think of as a runner, and she's like running marathons like that. I mean, there's like a lot of messages out there that can help all of us just feel like, you know, there's all different kinds of bodies, that our bodies are good and they're strong and we can do amazing things with them. And you can feed like on those, you know, follow those people on Instagram, mm-hmm. look up those people's websites mm-hmm. and, you know, maybe a quote or something that they say will just be like, oh, I never thought about myself that way, or you'll be inspired by their story. So I would just say like that's a way you kind of flip the script on the whole like social media dragging you down and let it like build you up and, you know, help you feel included as like a bigger story of what it means to be a beautiful, strong woman.
Follow me.
Well said. Yeah, that's awesome. Thank you so much. That is so true.
So, it's fine to have sex 6 weeks after a baby? What? I love that. I'm a mix of nervous exhausted, still healing from birth, feeling pressure that I, quote, should, please advise. I think I basically did, but the main thing is have realistic expectations. Your husband should have realistic expectations. It ain't happening a lot, but don't wait to feel like it again. And if it does hurt and continue to hurt after 8 to 10 weeks, you should definitely see your doctor. Okay, I love this one. This is flipping it. Suggestions for when the women's sex drive is higher than the man's. So, often I'll mention, when we say no to our husbands, we're not just saying no to their penis, although we think we are. We're saying no to, like, all of them. I have a really good friend who's in this position where her sex drive is way more than her husband's, and when I told her that quote, she goes, oh, I totally get that, because when he says no to me, I feel completely rejected as a person. So that's really a difficult place to be. As far as a woman's sex drive higher than a man's, sometimes for a man, it's just the way he is. And sometimes for a man, it's a medical thing. Like in my friend's situation, her husband actually had really bad thyroid disease. And once they got that under control, it got better. And it can be a medication that they're on and that kind of thing. It also can be, you know, honestly, I mean, guys, they have to get an erection. We don't really have to do anything if we can just hang out. So we have it easy. So a guy can't just sort of go with the flow. They have to, like, make things happen. And so if they're stressed or tired or work stuff or if they are drinking, because that's a little bit more difficult place to be, or really ask if your husband is addicted to pornography, because if they are getting it somewhere else, they're not feeling like they need it from you, that's another issue. And if it's really causing a problem in the marriage, then again, counseling can dive into the nuances of all of that too. Yeah.
And so he got that supplement, and now the script is flipped, and it's like, oh.
Yeah, take out the testosterone. Yeah, some men do have super low testosterone, so, and those are things that can be definitely tested. Yeah.